Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Friday. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. We're 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. I have to say this. I listened to most of Steve Cochran's show just now, and they did a very nice thing throughout the show. A tribute to Chet Kopic, who we found out yesterday had died complications of a car accident. And I was thinking about this a lot last night, and I was thinking about it all the way in, and I was listening to people's recollections of Chet Kopic. Sometimes when you hear somebody has passed away, you're shocked by it, you're saddened by it, but you accept it because we know the inevitable. We know how that's the way that our stories are going to end, right? But then there's other people, and I can't explain the rhyme or reason for this, that it's almost impossible for a brain to accept it.
I agree with you.
Fit into that category for some reason?
And this is not the way I saw Chet Kopic going out. Really?
No.
I expected more fanfare and something more tremendous.
Yeah.
And I'm still processing it. I had my Diet Coke and toasted them, my peruse, as he used to call every drink, which makes no sense. Get me a peruse.
It doesn't make any sense. I've had more than one person say to me, I didn't know that much about Chet Kopic, but from what I hear about him, I'm surprised that all these tributes are mounting. You know, because you hear the way he rubbed people the wrong way and he held grudges and there were people that, you know, he took liberties with that he shouldn't. And, you know, he felt cheated that he didn't get a chance to come back and be the main sports anchor at another station. And I've heard people say, you knew him better than I knew him. Why are people saying such nice things about him? Aside from the fact that he's died and that's what you do when people die. But if you drew out all the things that I'm hearing over the last 24 hours, you go, well, that must have been a horrible guy. He had his moments. There were people that would tell you horrible things about him. But for the most part, when you dealt with Chet on any kind of a basis, there was an element of love and hate at the same exact time, you know?
When we spoke to Rick Kempfer, who helped him write his book, Your Dime, My Dance Floor, Rick said he was surprised as they got into writing the book that he had burned so many bridges.
Yes.
And I think he did it professionally, but what I'm loving is listening to Steve's show this morning, looking on Facebook. These are just like regular people who are out and about,
right,
and Chet did these amazing things for them.
Yeah.
That warms my heart.
Yeah.
And Chet was always great to me. I mean, he really was.
I know.
He was a great guy, bigger than life, and you see that coming up a lot on all the tributes. He was bigger than life.
Yeah. He was, and enjoyed that, right? He liked showing up somewhere and have people recognize him and see him. That you know, that to him was as big a part of the job as reporting on sports scores, right?
But we're all like that. I mean, we're in radio. We, you know, everybody wants to be wanted. Isn't that the bottom line?
So
he just, you know, the fur coat, the beaver coat.
He played it up big.
Yeah, because that's, you know, that's what people looked at.
Sometimes I would see an outfit and I would say either Chet Kopic or Rooster. Remember Rooster from Beretta?
Yes.
that coat either belongs to Chet Kopic or Rooster from Beretta, I would say to myself.
He did have a hat with a feather in it,
I'm sure.
And he sang a little bit. I mean, he just really was a character. That's all I can say.
Isn't it also strange how, and you mentioned Rick Kempfer, who has co-written the book about Chet, a couple of books about Chet.
New one coming out this summer.
Right. So he said, you know, I, it's such a shock. I just talked to him Wednesday. And we all have that in us, too. When we lose somebody, you revert back to the fact that you just saw him a couple of days ago and you just saw him a week ago. And then you have to realize in your head, the mere fact that I saw somebody isn't going to keep them alive. But we all like to think for a minute, how could he be gone? I just saw him. Where did he go? How did that happen so fast?
Yeah, I guess you said it at the very beginning, you know, basically I'm paraphrasing, but no one here gets out alive, but I don't like to think about that now.
Yeah.
You know, on the other side of 50, you got me freaked out about that.
Yeah.
Do you realize half your life is gone? More than half.
Way more
than half.
Thanks,
Bill.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'd say twice as more.
Easily.
Just both of you.
Easily two-thirds.
I mean, think of it.
Yeah.
But
whoever sold us on 50 being middle age was a great salesman, because unless you're going to hit 100, and some of us will, but not all of us, but it's funny that we've been told 50 is middle age, and you go, wait, if the middle of 100 is 50,
And, you know, years ago, people did not live as long as they're living now. So, like, 20 was middle age.
Right.
Well, that's sad.
Centuries ago, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but still. But
thanks for depressing me.
You're welcome.
I mean, you know, when I was a kid, if you were in 50, Wendy, you'd be wearing your house dress around by now.
I am.
Feel free.
Right.
I know.
If you want to start wearing a house dress, please feel free.
Who invented the house dress, and why did everybody's mom wear them?
I don't know, but Bill sure looks good in them.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
I can't imagine your mom having a house dress.
Mine?
No, it was Bill's.
Mine
did. Steve, yours did?
No, not my mom, but my grandparents did. My grandmother's.
Probably
my
grandmother.
Stress
mothers.
I guess, yeah, my mom didn't either.
We'd go
it was
to family
grandma.
Picnics, and all the old aunts would be there in the summer in their house dresses. And
yeah, that's a good look. It was the official look of the mom back then.
Yeah, I guess my mom didn't. Because she was working. She was a single parent, so she was working pretty much the whole time I was growing up.
Yeah. Can we do this? Brian Altheimer, who works on Roe Show, was kind enough. He found some tape. There was a segment that I used to do with Chet at another radio station years ago, which I'll explain more in a little bit. But outwardly, it seems mean because it was myself and my two young daughters making fun of Chet on a weekly basis. But there was more behind it than just being mean. And I'll explain more in just a little bit. We'll play a little clip for you. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy. All right. So we found out yesterday that Chet Kopic, who is without a doubt, love him, hate him, or somewhere in the middle, an absolute sports legend in the city of Chicago. He really did reinvent the sports broadcasting business. So years ago, about 15 or 16 years ago, when I was working at WLS, Chet was being brought into Rokan's show every Friday, and he would make his expert, quote-unquote, football picks. And he was horrible at it. He picked the wrong teams every single week. So I said on the air one time, I go, Chet, I know you've been doing this a long time, but my daughters are six, and they could pick better than you. And he goes, bring it on, like that. So from then on, for the next year, every Friday, I would tape a bit with my daughters, Reese and Kylie. I would write something for them where they would pick against Chet. The meaner, the better. Chet wanted it to be mean. Because I said to him, Chet, if you ever feel that these are too mean, and he goes, Bill, my friend, the meaner, the better. People love it. Be as mean as you can be. Billy Jeffrey left. Be as mean as you can be. So I would write stuff. Like one time we did a bit. Remember how Johnny Carson would do Karnak the Magnificent?
Yeah.
I did Kylak, because my daughter's name is Kylie, Kylak the Magnificent, where it was the same thing. She'd hold up an envelope, and she would say, like at Christmas time, she'd go, ho, ho, ho. And then we'd open the envelope, and it would say, name Chet Kopic's last three dates, that kind of thing.
Ouch.
Chet loved it.
He wanted the attention.
Yeah.
And he could play along and dish it back.
I know. But the trick for him was
he was
a grown man having to be mean back to 2 6-year-old girls, which, you know, you couldn't help but win in that situation if you're on our side. So here's a clip from one of those as Reese and Kylie were picking against Chet Kopic.
Here they are once again, my daughters Kylie and Reese, coming off another big week where they went a perfect 3-0, easily outdoing Chet Kopic.
Hey, Daddy, what does Mr. Kopic do for a living?
For a living? He picks football games.
That'll do.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Girls, the Bears spend another week in New Jersey. This time, they're one touchdown favorites over the Jets. So, Reese, what's it going to be?
Daddy, the Giants are 2-2 at home, and the Bears are 4-0 on the road. The Giants are better than the Jets, and you saw how we shredded the Giants.
So you like the Bears?
Very much.
Kylie, the Irish are taking on Army in South Bend, and the spread is at 32.
And Daddy, that spread is too high. Don't get me wrong, Army isn't a very good team, but 32 isn't doing it for me. Notre Dame wins, but won't cover.
Girls, as college games go, it doesn't get any bigger than this. Number 1, Ohio State, hosting number 2, Michigan, and the magic number is 6.5.
Daddy, we've got two teams at 11-0. This one will be a barn burner. The key is the location. The game is in Columbus, and that's why we say Ohio State all the way.
Okay, girls, good luck with your picks this week.
Daddy, tell us again what Mr. Kopic does for a living.
He picks football games.
Oh,
boy, I'll tell you, you can really learn to hate those kids in a hurry.
Yeah, he loved it. And, you know, we did it for a year, and then Chet had to leave, and they brought in Lou Kanellis. And I got to tell you, it's not fun making fun of Lou Kanellis. You can make fun of Chet all day, every day. Right. But, you know, when it was changed, it was too hard to do.
I already miss Chet. And I, Bill, when I heard you say, you know, and Chet Kopic, who passed away yesterday, it's not registering.
Strange? I don't know what sets some people apart from other people, but with some, you accept that you're not happy about it because you've lost somebody. So you just go, well, that's the way it is. You lose somebody. But then with Chet yesterday, a dozen times as I was thinking about him, I go, well, that can't be. And again, this morning, as they were talking about him on Steve's show, I go, I don't think that's right.
It is hard to accept, and I understand, you know, when you lose a parent or a sibling or a child, I mean, that is incomprehensible.
Yeah.
But, you know, we knew Chet. Listeners knew him through the radio and TV, but he's not a family member. Why am I having such a difficult time?
But he was one of those people who, even if you didn't know him in person, because he put it all out there when he was on television or on the radio, he reached across the barrier, yeah, and you felt like you knew him. We were lucky enough to know him. So, yeah, it's one thing. But for so many of his fans, for so many people who listened to him or saw him on TV, you felt like you knew him just because of the nature of who he was.
And he did make you feel special. I was listening to John McDonough talk this morning on the Steve Cochran show, and he was, Chet Kopic could remember every detail of everything. John McDonough was saying at times when they had some kind of speaking event and someone was running late, Chet could just pull this information out and it was correct. And yeah, he was just a fount of information.
When I would hear him remembering something that happened years ago, you'd ask him something, he'd go, Billy, Craig Nettles came up, the count was 2-2, he looked over at Chambliss, Chambliss was on second base, he gave him, and you go, how do you remember that small detail about something that happened 25 years ago?
Wait, this from you?
Yeah.
But that, yeah. I mean, this goes beyond the two of you put together, because you both do have memories. You know, sports fans are like that. You can bring up these crazy statistics.
I'm amazed at the detail he remembers.
It is pretty incredible.
Yeah. Because you say to yourself, why would your brain keep stuff that you're probably never going to have to remember or talk about again? But his brain just held all that stuff.
Remember, you know? Nanny and the Professor, Bill? Who was the professor again?
Richard Long.
Thank you very much.
You're
case
welcome.
Closed.
Okay.
It's,
I know,
different.
Everybody has an area like that where you just go, I'm never going to need to know this, but I should keep it in my brain just in case.
Classic rock and roll stuff, I know a lot about that. Too. I mean, there are just things you're interested in, and that was his interest and his passion.
But for every single sport, there were sports he enjoyed more than other sports, but I mean, honestly, I saw him do roller derby games. I saw him do wrestling events.
Yep.
Where he had that kind of knowledge of roller derby and wrestling, not just the big four in sports, but even the smaller stuff. He just remembered it.
And wasn't he hanging with Billy Corgan during that whole wrestling thing?
Yes, he was.
All these crazy worlds collided with Chet Kopic.
I know. And I also saw, this by way of Facebook yesterday, I saw that in other cities other than Chicago, Chet was famous here in Chicago, but sportscasters around the country were mentioning him fondly, and that's very, very nice.
He would have loved this.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And, you know, I follow him on Facebook. A lot of listeners do, and his daughter got married about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
So he was beaming with pride, showing pictures of that, so he got to see his daughter walk down the aisle. Our prayers, positive thoughts going out to his fiance. He was, I believe, scheduled to get married in October.
Soon, yeah.
And it's just heartbreaking and hard to believe that someone larger than life is no longer in our life.
So true. Very, very true. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news. And then there's a lot more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks so much, Steve. Still to come on the show, in a half an hour, we'll talk to Alexander Zalbin. We talk to Alexander about what's going on television every Friday. He'll join us. And then at 11:30, our friend Bobby Slayton stops by.
Just coming by to say hi.
He's not performing in town about once a year. He and his girlfriend travel through Chicago, and he just wanted to come up and say hello.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
I wish more people did that with us.
Love Bobby Slayton.
I've got to suck up to him because I'm wearing my Skechers today.
Yeah, I don't know if he's still, I'm sure he's still a Skechers spokesmodel.
He was for a while, right?
Yeah, and he said, I believe his girlfriend got him custom-made Skechers that light up. You know when you were a little kid and you had the soles that as you stepped on something, they'd light up?
Yeah.
He wanted them as an adult, and she reached out to Skechers, and they made this...
An adult pair.
Yes. And then
I don't remember that being a thing, though, when we were kids. I think that came
along...
For
our kids.
Right. It came along later.
Pretty
but he
cool,
was still,
though.
He was jealous that as an adult, he couldn't have that.
Yes. So his girlfriend contacted the Skechers people, and they made like a special custom pair.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they sell them to other people, but then somewhere along the line, he started talking about Skechers. And the first time he came up, you weren't here.
Yeah.
And Bertrand was co-hosting with me, and he was giving us Skechers cards to get a free
coupons.
It was raining
for
Skechers
a free pair.
Yeah.
Not like $5 off.
Know.
This was a free pair.
I know.
He gave me two pairs of shoes.
And
what other guest can you say that about, Steve?
No
that
one.
We've had nobody.
No. So I wonder if he's still doing the Skechers.
I don't know. I don't know.
Wouldn't you like the light up shoes? Because I have to be honest with you. I'm thinking about Chet Kopic trying to get attention. I have a little of that in me, too.
Light-up shoes would do the trick.
I would love them.
They would do the trick. I also see kids that have shoes that look like tennis shoes, and then I don't know what they do to them, but they all of a sudden they have rollerblades on
wheelies.
Them. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
They didn't have that when I was a kid. I didn't know that existed.
I'm glad they didn't.
You would have been involved in so many crashes over the years.
Although I have to tell you, roller skating was big when we were growing up, and I was a pretty decent roller skater.
Were you pretty good?
Yeah. Maybe I would have been better.
I have a question about wedding etiquette to throw your way.
Well, we're on the cusp of
wedding season.
June is the big month, although
right.
It might be shifting to fall.
It is shifting to the fall.
It is?
And
is that on the Wintrust Business Lunch?
I think we have talked about it because people are, in the industry, they actually say it's weather related.
It's just too hot in the summer.
It's just too
hot in
the summer.
You don't want to be a sweaty bride.
Although I got married October 25th, and you never know, October, sometimes you have 80-degree weather. It's really
very unpredictable.
Weird. Well, I got married on July 30th, and you always have 80-degree weather.
Oh, yeah?
It was hot.
You knew going in that
sweating.
It was going to be a little on the hot side, right, Steve?
My pictures we got our wedding pictures back. I'm like, why didn't the photographer tell me I looked like that? My hair was matted down from sweat, and it's terrible.
Nice.
What year did you have your nuptials?
What year?
I mean, what month?
What part of the year?
Yeah.
At the end of June.
Oh, so you were summery,
it was pretty,
too.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. All right, so here's a story that we are reading about this morning about a kid. Her aunt is getting married. The girl decides she definitely wants to go to the wedding. She wants to see her aunt get married, but she doesn't want to get dressed up. So the compromise she makes with her mom is she's going to go to the wedding semi-dressed up, but as a superhero.
Was she standing up in the wedding?
I don't
was
think
she, like
she was standing
flower
up.
Flower girl or anything?
Was she? I don't know if she was or not.
Because first of all, it's not that fun having kids at your wedding. I know sometimes you have to have them.
Yeah.
I had my nieces and nephew that were part of the wedding party.
Mm-hmm.
So
flower girl, ring bearer?
One was a junior bridesmaid, and yes, ring bearer and flower girl.
Oh, yeah. You know, weddings, they run the gamut. Sometimes you let a couple of kids in. Sometimes it's everybody's allowed. Sometimes it'll say on the invitation, no children, please.
I think that's rude.
No children?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're...
Here's the etiquette. When you send an invitation and it says, like, Mr. Bill Leff and guests,
yeah,
that's you and one guest.
Right.
I think most people assume...
But would you designate it on the invitation that there are no children will be present?
No, that's rude.
Yeah.
And so you're not saying it's rude not to have kids, just to say it so clearly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wedding invitation. It's supposed to indicate love togetherness, and it's like, hey, don't bring your kid.
Except that if you're on a fixed, not just a budget, but maybe a spatial crunch where you only have a certain amount of seats available, like we only had a very finite amount of people, and several people I knew were like, what about my kids? I'm like,
No, kids don't come to weddings, though.
But,
I mean,
you know, they sure used to. And
all the time.
Yes,
when I was a kid,
me too. Family
weddings.
I went
to 20 weddings a year for a while.
And I wonder if it's one of the ways that we've sort of lost our way. Because we're so concerned now with weddings being nice and they're so expensive that You know, I have great memories growing up of at family weddings, running around and
me
too. There's something to that.
Sneaking beers behind the Legion Hall.
I didn't even do that. Wow.
No, I don't know. I'm making that up, but you know, but with the whole families together, we don't have that anymore.
And we had little. We're Italian, so there were like hundreds of cousins that we could play around with. And yeah. Do the tarantella and sneak wine off the table. I guess we did do that, Steve.
Now it's coming back to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I went to countless weddings as a kid, and I think my daughters, when they were little, probably went to just a handful.
Yeah, and my kids, too.
Is that because of the cost, Steve, or what do you think that is?
I'm sure it's because of the cost, but maybe it's because we're trying to have nicer weddings than we used to, too.
Oh, maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
It used to be just...
Yeah, it used to be at like a banquet hall or something. It was never... I can't remember family weddings being that amazingly posh.
You'd have the peanuts, the mints, and the cake.
Yes. Yes.
The mints.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So the deal this girl makes with her mom is, I will go to the wedding, I'll dress up kind of, but I want to dress up like a superhero, right? So that's the compromise. The bride in the wedding says, oh, no, that's not how this is going to be played.
I agree with her.
Here's the story. When it comes to getting children dressed for an occasion, things can get very tough. When a child decides that they don't want to wear the outfit that you carefully picked out... There's no convincing them otherwise, and if they find something that they want to wear nonstop, you'll need a lot of luck to get them to change into something more situation appropriate. So spare a thought for this family who is battling it out over one little girl's desire to wear a superhero costume to her aunt's wedding. Now, first of all, it is inappropriate, and it'll steal so much focus. You know, the bride is going to tell you, she'll be the first to tell you, it's my day, and rightfully so.
It's a kid.
I know, but don't you think so many of the people there will be focused on this little kid dressed like the female version of Captain Marvel than on the bride?
Yeah, I'm switching my tune here. Because,
are you?
Yeah, I thought she was standing up in the wedding.
No.
Because that I wouldn't allow.
Just attending.
But attending, who cares? That kid's not even going to last that long anyway. They'll bring her up to the room. She can take a nap.
Superheroes don't nap, Wendy.
If I was a superhero, I would be the napper. I just finally figured it out.
Yeah.
You can fall asleep on the drop of a hat.
Anywhere you want.
Yeah.
A bride has lashed out online about her niece's choice of outfit for her wedding, which is a red and blue satin design with a large gold star on the front to make the wearer look like a mini version of Captain Marvel. The bride wrote, I was at the soon-to-be in-laws today, and they chose this dress for my fiancé's niece. I told them to keep shopping. Do people really not understand what to wear to weddings? I wonder if this is causing friction in the family. The bride's comments were then shared in a wedding shaming Facebook group. Wait, does that exist?
I guess.
Sparking debate over whether the bride was in the right to kick off about her niece wearing a superhero outfit to the wedding or not. Some sided firmly with the bride, saying, you have to be such a narcissistic adult to allow your precious little princess to do this. Others questioned what was so wrong about the dress, suggesting that the star actually made the outfit look quite jazzy and wedding appropriate. It's still going to look like a superhero costume.
I'm just trying to pretend if I was the mom of the superhero kid.
Yeah, how would you handle it? I'm curious.
I would try to say, you know, you can wear your superhero maybe at the tail end of things, but for
at
church and all that, maybe.
Yeah.
And if they really did not want to oblige, I would see if maybe I could get a babysitter and say, why don't you go hang it, do a little slumber party at your friend's house. And that, how old is this kid?
It doesn't say her age. I'm looking to find out.
Because honestly, when you brought this up, I thought it was she was like the flower girl or something.
Just an attendee.
In that case, I would say I need to get the neighbor's kid to do it.
What about this? Could you reason with this little girl and say, a wedding day is a very important day for everybody, but especially the bride. It's a day that she has dreamt about her entire life. And the last thing you want to do is get in the way. Think about how you would feel if it was your special wedding day and somebody wanted to steal focus, steal the attention.
That is so sweet and wonderful and great in theory.
Would it work?
I don't know.
You don't think it would work?
It just depends on the kid.
I guess it does. But I would make every effort for that to be a reality, to say to the kid, Wouldn't you feel awful if the tables were reversed? Wouldn't you feel horrible that somebody was kind of getting the attention that you need and want on that day?
Then, depending on how old this kid and if they're Catholic, you know, you say, well, how would you feel if you're making your first communion and your aunt shows up in her wedding dress?
Right. As we've established on the show a bunch of times, your husband, Jimmy, is the biggest Star Wars fan anywhere.
Yeah.
What if you found out just prior to the wedding that somebody was coming and they were going to be dressed like Chewbacca to your wedding?
I do love Chewbacca. That's the worst one.
I should have picked
Boba Fett's cool, too.
Emperor Palpatine.
Okay, yeah.
He's a six-year-old kid, but he's dressed like Emperor Palpatine on the Death Star. How would you take that news?
I would say the wedding was canceled and no, don't even worry showing up. Thank you. You can send the gift to this address.
Right.
Yeah, that would bug me.
Of course, because it's your day.
But it's a little kid, too. That's kind of the difference.
This would also be a little kid in this hypothetical situation.
I wouldn't care that much.
You'd be all right with it? I should have dressed like Emperor Palpatine to your wedding. I didn't know you were so free-spirited about the whole thing.
I am. I say that now because Jim did not ask. He did not request for any kind of Star Wars anything to go on.
Yeah.
It was pretty traditional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weren't you shocked?
Shocked. I was sure there'd be some hint of Star Wars in the wedding. There wasn't any.
And that was right around the time you got him into collecting again.
Right.
I mean, he had all these toys that he played with as a kid, but after going to one of your Christmas parties, he
found his evil
path. I meant to thank you for all this, by the
way. No thanks necessary,
Marty.
No thanks.
Kidding.
Look at all the people who have opinions on this. We're at 312-981-7200. We're trying to figure out how this should best be handled. So give us a call or a text. We would love to hear from you. All right, let me catch you up really quickly. A family's in peril, Wendy. A family's in shambles because a woman is getting married and her niece is just attending the wedding. Doesn't say how old she is. I'm guessing she's going to be 5 or 6 or 7, somewhere in there, right? She doesn't want to go dressed really, really nicely in wedding attire. She wants to dress like her favorite superhero, Captain Marvel. Her mom says it's fine. The bride says, oh, no, not at my wedding.
All right, Michelle's on the line. Hi, Michelle, 312-981-7200. What do you think about this?
I think, why don't the parents or the mom just say no to the girl? No, you're not wearing it. You want to go to the wedding? No. I don't understand why she can't say no to her own kid.
It's so funny you say that. As I look at the text line, easily 80% of the texts are saying, who's the parent here and why are they not saying no? Exactly what you're saying. That's a word that seems to have escaped many of our vocabularies for some reason.
I know. I mean, how many times did your kids go out of the house, try to go out of the house wearing something you don't want them to wear?
Right.
Everyday occurrence. No, you can't wear a superhero costume to a wedding.
Problem solved.
So you're with the bride here. You think that's not acceptable?
Well, as a parent, I would never have even brought it up. I would never have let it go that far.
I agree with you.
Because I just think it's inappropriate. You learn how to dress for certain things, and that's what the parent does. Now, the bride said no, you know, I would then go along with it even more. But I would never, even if the bride said yes, I would say no, you're not wearing that to the wedding. So
too much of a distraction.
It's not appropriate to wear that to the wedding.
What if it was at a superhero's wedding?
Well, there you have
it. Yeah, then it's okay.
Can I just tell you, if I was the parent, I really would try to get a babysitter because you'll have way more fun without your kid there anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Exactly. My kids didn't go to weddings. Sorry. It's not fun. And plus, they don't eat the food, and it's a big waste of time. So.
Yep. All right.
Thank you, Michelle. Brian's on the line. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love your show.
Thank you,
Brian. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know what? I didn't catch the very beginning of this discussion. So as far as a superhero costume, previous caller, I agree 100%. I mean, parent your kid, end of story. But I called in because I, over my career, I've sang at about over 300 weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an exaggeration. I actually went back and kind of calculated. And one hard and fast rule that if I were king before John Williams would be no infants at the ceremony.
No infants.
Because
yeah.
No infants, because I can't tell you out of those 300 weddings how many of them, probably a third of them, were literally ruined by a crying kid and a stupid parent that wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
It was just, it was absolutely mind-boggling.
You know, kids cry, guys. I mean, I agree. But what if, you know...
It ruins the moment, though. It really does.
I understand that. I have never brought a kid to a wedding. I don't know that it's a good idea. But life happens, guys.
Yeah. I know, but if it happens, get up and leave.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I've seen people in the church turn around and glare at these people, and they're just sitting there kind of rocking their kid. And it would go on for 20 or so minutes, and they wouldn't do anything.
And do you remember, I don't know if they still have them, but the churches I had gone to when I was growing up, they had a like
crying
a
room?
Yeah, crying room where,
right.
You know.
That's where I go to watch Bears games.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
All right. Well, I agree with you. It's, you know, I it's not fun for the infant either, to be honest with you. It
no,
isn't.
Of course not.
But the infant won't remember this. The bride will remember it for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
You know?
So, anyway, my 2 cents worth.
All right. Well, thank you. It's funny listening to two guys saying, the bride. There were a couple of things that didn't go picture perfect at our wedding. My sister-in-law was a little late showing up for pictures, and you know me, I get upset about everything. I was just like, well, we'll get her in the tail end of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make the best. No wedding is going to go perfectly, except yours did, of course.
You wouldn't hold a slight grudge if somebody brought an infant to your wedding, and during the vows, the kid just was wailing and screaming and crying. You wouldn't hold a little grudge?
I don't really hold grudges.
Okay. All right.
I really don't.
Here's a texter who says, I was a bad mom. My daughter went to a memorial service with me dressed in a Minnie Mouse outfit when she was 2 years old.
Maybe she had no one to watch her kid and she wanted to go to this memorial service.
I know, but it's just
she was two?
Yes.
Okay, who makes the decision there?
Right.
Come on.
I know.
You guys, it's not all black and white. There are some gray areas in this life.
I think Minnie Mouse pretty much is black and white.
Right, the early Minnie Mouse.
There was some red.
What do you mean it's not an easy decision? It's a two-year-old kid.
Right.
I don't understand that, really, because the two-year-old doesn't really fight back at that point.
Yeah.
I don't understand it, but I mean...
And if they do, you're stronger.
Hopefully. Hopefully, yeah.
But then you want to pick your battles. If you want to go to a memorial service and you have no family or anyone to watch your kid,
you got
to
dress him like Minnie Mouse.
Well, I wouldn't do that. But maybe nothing else was clean. Who knows? You don't know what's going on.
I am coming to your memorial service dressed as Minnie Mouse. I'm calling Elton John right now and borrowing the Minnie Mouse outfit I'm wearing to your service.
I would be more angry with you for taking attention away from me at my memorial service than my wedding.
The wedding one is too late. I've missed my chance there.
Yeah, but no one could take away attention from me at my wedding.
No, I guess. All right.
But at my memorial service, that would bug me.
Open field. Can't wait. All right, we'll take
open casket, open field.
Okay, you guys really are just not nice people. You judge everyone,
it's
and you're not invited to my memorial service.
Oh, don't
That's
say
the
that.
Thing. You can't control that.
Yeah, we're going. We already bought tickets.
I already rented the costume.
You guys,
quit it.
We got tickets through Jam Online. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
Really funny.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. Every Friday, Alexander Zalbin is kind enough to join us, and we talk television with him. He is the managing editor of The Decider. Decider.com is the website to visit. Alexander, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Great to talk to you.
I've missed out on the television talk
for
the last
few weeks. Wendy's not been here. So catch
You're
her up.
You're all caught up, though. You watched all the television in the meantime, though, right?
I did listen to the podcast because I really do like hearing your suggestions. You've been pretty good at predicting what I'd like. So,
oh, nice. Thank you.
May I ask you, there was huge fanfare for, this is the last season for Game of Thrones, and fans of the show couldn't wait for it to start. It started last week. Are they getting what they were hoping for, pretty much?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very relatively early going. There's 6 episodes in this season. There is going to be an hour-long episode this Sunday, but then after that, they're supersized. They're going well past an hour. But it was almost instantly iconic, and it was kind of amazing to see this first episode, even as a table setter, where all of the characters are coming together, they're getting ready for battle. The only character who died was a small kid that probably made fans go, wait, who is that? I don't remember that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But so many scenes resonated with people. They've been talking about it nonstop. It was one of the biggest things that's ever been on HBO of all time. Millions of tweets, millions of people watching. This is huge.
We've talked about this a little bit, Alex, but I want to get your take on it in terms of Game of Thrones. Sometimes shows know that they have a season left or 2 seasons left. Other times they're surprised. The network will just cancel them and they don't know if they've got another season left. With Game of Thrones, it's probably playing out good that they knew they had a fixed amount of time left, right, to close things off.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting case as well, because they always knew where the show was going to go and always had a very clear plan for it. I don't think they planned beyond these 8 seasons. And in fact, if anything, at a certain point, I think they were only planning for 7. Then things got fleshed out a little bit more. But they've been working off of George R.R. Martin's books, or rather the outline, since he hasn't even released the last 2 books of the series. But they talked very heavily with him about where he was going with it, what his plans are. So they've known what they're doing pretty much since the show started, which is completely unique in the TV atmosphere.
And they've announced, HBO has said, that they will do other shows that are related to Game of Thrones, prequels or possibly sequels. Will some of the characters that people know from Game of Thrones carry over into those new shows, or has that not been determined yet?
That is a big question right now, and nothing has been officially greenlit, though I will be 100% shocked if there isn't some sort of announcement along with the last episode of Game of Thrones. Right now they have, depending on who you talk to, 4 or 5 prequels and sequels and spin-off series in development. One of them is a prequel that actually takes place thousands of years before Game of Thrones. So barring any sort of time travel twist, it's not going to be any of the same characters, but you will see some teases and situations we've heard of things that will be recognized by fans, so to speak. That's the one that's closest in development, but other than that, we don't know anything about the 4 other scripts.
Is this the biggest show on television right now, would you say?
This is one of the biggest shows of all time.
Wow.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
I feel like I'm missing out.
I feel like that every day.
But I have no desire to watch it at all.
Really?
Ever.
Oh. Yeah. Listen, there's a lot of people that feel like that, and there was certainly a lot of sentiment that you see going up to, say, the Super Bowl, where people who don't care about sports say, oh, great, is it football time again? That's almost the other direction with nerd stuff with Game of Thrones, where people saying, I do not care. I'm not into this at all. Dragons are not for me. Fantasy is not for me. I think having a passing familiarity with it, because it'll be important to the history of TV, both looking back and going forward, is important if you care about that thing at all. But nobody needs to watch a TV show. There's no requirement to watch it. We'll be discussing it nonstop for the next 5 to 6 weeks or so, and then for some people for the rest of their lives. But there's other TV on. There's other things happening. If you're not watching it, you are okay.
I have to say, and I've not seen the show. All I see is, you know, if you watch HBO with any regularity, they're constantly, you know, promoting the show. The production values are second to none. It's amazing that this is a TV show and not a big budget movie.
Yeah, I mean, they've put, I'm forgetting the exact figure, but I believe each episode now costs about $10 million, which is insanity. And particularly if you think about it from, sure, a big budget movie like Avengers Endgame or something like that costs $200 million, $250 million. But for the most part, they're building those sets from scratch every single time for a movie. Versus Game of Thrones, they're able to, quote unquote, save a little money by raising the sets, by using the TV budget. But at the same time, they are blowing it out. It is unprecedented in TV history there.
How about that? There is a lawsuit involving the guys who are responsible for Stranger Things. The creator of Stranger Things are being sued. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, and we don't exactly know what's going to happen. But as far as we hear about it, there is a indie filmmaker who had a short film that he calls Montauk. He claims he met the creators of Stranger Things, the Duffer Brothers, at a party, and over a 15-minute conversation pitched his film to them, and then they went off and did Stranger Things, and he claims that it's the exact same idea. Now, everything that we know about this particular film is that it's mysterious circumstances in the woods and a kid disappears. So personally, my speculation glasses go on when I hear something like that,
yeah,
because it feels like anybody could come up with that.
Yeah.
But apparently there was enough evidence there that the judge said they are going to trial to determine what will happen next. There's also evidence that has been released publicly where the Duffer Brothers were discussing the idea for Stranger Things a good, I believe, at least 3 to 4 years before they even met this guy. So we'll see what happens to it in the long term. But the big surprise there was that it wasn't just thrown out. It seems like there's at least some enough of a similarity between the two projects that they are moving forward to a trial.
Will this in any way change the startup date? The new season is starting, season 3 for Stranger Things, pretty soon. Is that, that's not going to change that at all, will it?
No. Okay. Stranger Things 3 is coming out July 4th. Nothing's going to stop that. I think in an absolute worst-case scenario, and mind you, I'm not a lawyer, so take this with a grain of salt, but in an absolute worst-case scenario, Netflix will put up a small, tidy little bit of money and take care of this whole problem and make it go away.
Yeah.
But I don't even think it'll get to that point.
All right.
I want to say that I'm loving the new Twilight Zone. It's worth the $5.99 a month. I don't know how long the season is going to be, but it's sure worth it to watch it. So thanks for the tip on that. And when is Baskets coming back, and is it coming back?
Baskets, that is coming back, I believe, for a fourth season.
I can't wait anymore.
Tell them to hurry, Alex. Wendy's ready.
All right. Okay, I'll release it now.
Call them today. Thank you. Thank you.
But it is for sure coming back.
It is for sure. It was renewed for a fourth season. One of the tricky things that's going on right now is FX is, of course, a subset of Fox, and Fox was bought by Disney. And there's a lot of questions going on now that the two companies are merged. What's going to happen going forward? I was actually talking to one of my writers, Kayla Cobb, about this earlier today, and we believe that FX is critically acclaimed enough and good enough that they're going to continue, and Disney is going to want that. But it feels like they're on hold with a lot of projects right now while the behind-the-scenes stuff all gets figured out.
Another show on FX, I know I rave about it. It's called Better Things with Pamela Adlon, and there's an article up at Decider.com by Tara Ariano talking about the kids are so nasty to their mother. They're teenagers. And I just want to say that, you know, not all kids are all perfect at all times. And when you have teenagers, I find this to be somewhat realistic. There are moments, maybe this is exaggerated a little bit, but teenagers are difficult. They're having a difficult time, and it's hard to parent a teenager sometimes. So I think it's it shows a true family where some of us are dysfunctional at times. So that's my recommendation. I love it.
Yeah, the show's great. It's running right now in its third season, and it's going to be going until mid-May or so with new episodes. But yeah, to your point, Pamela Adlon treats the stuff very realistically, the family realistically. I also have kids. They're not nice to me all the time.
Put them on, Alex. We'll talk to those kids. We'll set them straight.
You know what's weird, though? When you see the beginning of it, they still mention Louis C.K.'s name, which shocked to see. I thought that kind of was off of everything.
No, I mean, he still gets the production credit on a lot of things. Certainly, FX is not doing business with him anymore, and Pamela Adlon, though the show started because of her relationship, her business relationship with him, she has very much distanced herself from Louis C.K. She credits him for launching the show, but that's it. Otherwise, it's her baby. It's the thing that she creates, the thing she works on. This is just a contractual thing that continues.
I love her.
That's Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and come back for more TV talk. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin. Comes by on Fridays, and we talk television with him. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Alex, here's a text for you. I love, all caps, all giant caps, I love Fosse Verdon how many episodes in the series. That's the love story between love-hate story between Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon on cable. What's the story with that? How many episodes?
Sure. Great question. There are, I believe, 8 episodes. I could be wrong about that. I'm going to look it up while I'm talking to you guys. But this show is so good. It's airing on FX right now. Stars Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams as Fosse and Verdon. It's amazingly directed, amazingly acted. It's packed with Broadway folks because behind the scenes is Lin-Manuel Miranda and a bunch of other folks like that. It's great. Even if you don't know anything about Broadway, you can jump right in. You'll definitely be lost for a little while, but it's so beautiful to look at and well acted, it doesn't even matter.
Is it the same territory as All That Jazz several years ago, the movie that Roy Scheider was in, or is it a different storyline?
It's a little broader. Yeah. I think it kind of goes through your entire lives, jumps around in time. The first episode is very focused on the making of Sweet Charity and Cabaret, but it also jumps forward in time to show, mild spoiler, I guess, but Bob Fosse's final moments, also shows a little bit of his childhood. It keeps Gwen Verdon in the background, but that's kind of the point of the whole thing, because yeah. she was in the background while he got the focus. But as it goes, it goes throughout their entire history, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Great. Very, very good. A show called Someone Great. This is on Netflix. I don't know too much about it. What can you tell us about Someone Great?
Sure. This is actually a movie that drops on Netflix today. It stars Gina Rodriguez from Jane the Virgin and with Keith Stanfield. It's a rom-com, but the idea of it almost reverses the path a little bit. It shows how the two characters met, how they fell in love, but it focuses on they have to break up because she gets her dream job in Los Angeles, so she has to move out of town. So it's her last night hanging out with her two friends. Our reviewer, Anna Menta, who is our senior film reporter, saw it and absolutely loved it. And if you remember the late, great show from MTV called Sweet Vicious, it's from the same creator as that.
I don't know that show.
I'm
what
old.
Is that show?
That was a show by, her name's Jennifer Caitlin Robinson. It deals with sexual assault, and basically the women who deal with it at the beginning decide, you know what, that's it. We're going to get revenge. So it deals with it in a very real way, in a very realistic way, but it's also very intense and exciting to watch at the same time. People love that show. Nobody watched that show, but it was on for 2 seasons.
Oh.
And you know, you can kind of find it here and there. I don't think it's streaming a lot of places.
The second season of Star Trek Discovery comes to a close this week. That's one of those CBS All Access shows. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, that aired last night, so it's available to stream today if you want to check it out. Man, this second season was crazy. Anson Mount was Captain Pike, the original captain of the Enterprise. They were fighting this evil artificial intelligence called Control. But last night's finale, in case you checked out of the season, if you are a fan of Star Trek, because it got a little complicated in terms of the plot, was, I would say, the biggest action movie in Star Trek history. It was just nonstop from the beginning of the hour to the end, with these space battles on a scale that they have never attempted in any of the movies or TV show before. I was on the edge of my seat the oh. entire time, and it ends, spoiler, but I think it was coming if you're a fan, it ends with the classic Enterprise with Ethan Peck, who's playing Spock on the show, getting a shave and looking like a classic Leonard Nimoy.
Oh.
So it has shouts out to the fans of the original franchise as well as the new franchise. It's great. This was a fantastic season of television.
Alexander, we only have a quick minute, but I know that there's a Beyonce film that just came out. It's Homecoming, right? Is that the title?
Yeah, this is from her Coachella performance of last year. It goes behind it a little bit, shows off the music, and there's also an album that's streaming along with it. If you're a fan of Beyonce, check it out. If you're just a fan of stupendous performances, you can check out as well. And that's on Netflix right now.
Very good. Alex, great to talk to you. Hope you have a great week, and we'll check in with you exactly a week from now.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, guys.
That's Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor over at Decider.com. A break, some news, and then the Pitbull himself, Bobby Slayton, joins us live in studio. It's Bill and Whitey, WGN.
All right, everybody. Here's my recommendation. Put your seatbelts on, even if you're not driving a car. Even if you're sitting at home, put your seatbelts on. Bobby Slayton is here, the pit bull of comedy. Where can you see Bobby perform? You cannot.
Nowhere. And the reason you have to, I speak so fast, is you guys give me one segment.
Yes.
And I told her, I listen to the rest of the show, I go, there's no reason to do that. There's no reason to do that.
Right.
You know, then the weather and the traffic, this and that.
You don't
want
that.
No.
It should be all you.
Right. We already wasted enough time with my introduction. But anyway, so what's great is the last time I was here, it was wonderful. I drove like an hour and a half to the Christmas tree store.
Yes.
And we broadcast from
that's right.
And you know what? I thought it was going to be awful. The lovely people and all the little elves put the potpourri.
They loved you.
It was great. And then, so I told you the time before that, the reason I was here to plug Zanies,
right?
And nobody ever does radio unless you get a gig to plug. And I think the time before that, I was in town with my girlfriend Dominique Cohen, mm-hmm. who's a jeweler, and she got a show at Neiman Marcus. So mm-hmm. I came in with her. And I think that time I did your show was the first time in 40 years of stand up comedy that I ever went on the radio with nothing to plug.
Oh, we feel special for that, Bobby. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. And it's just really nice. I do have one thing to plug, but I'm not.
Plug away.
Well, actually, there's no reason to. It's not until the fall. But I got to do a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh.
Did you?
And, you know, in the last 20 years, there were a couple of shows that were I always wanted to do. One was Seinfeld, which I almost got on.
Yeah.
The other was The Sopranos, which would have been great.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Curb Your Enthusiasm. And it's one of my favorite shows of all time. And the greatest thing about the show, not a lot of talk about my episode till it airs, but the greatest thing is they don't really have a script. They give you kind of an outline. Larry David gives you an outline, and you know you kind of ad-lib, and there's a couple of writers that might throw you a line or two.
Yeah.
But my biggest fear, and it was the last time I worked on a Woody Allen movie, if I may drop more names.
Sure.
He gave me this 5-page thing to memorize, and I don't know if it's because I have ADD, if I'm an idiot, if I did a lot of drugs in high school, but I can't memorize all these lines.
Oh, really?
That's got to be hard.
It's got to be really hard. You know, I was watching The Amazing Mrs. Matzo, whatever it's called, Maisel, whatever. And my friend Kevin Pollak, you know, he plays
this so
schmott the garment guy. And I'm going, you know, and Pollock's a good friend of mine. I'm going, I could do that, and I could do it, but I'm watching him. I go, I can never be that good, and I can never memorize those soliloquies and those speeches.
Very challenging.
It's very challenging.
Yeah.
So Curb was a lot of fun, and the only thing that bothers me is I wasn't on all these years, because it was so much fun to work with, you know, Larry and Jeff Garland and Richard Lewis. I got to work with all of them, and they're all friends of mine, so that was a thrill.
Did they shoot the episode before or after Bob Einstein passed away?
It was after Bob passed away, and he was great. He was a friend. But anyway,
he played Marty Funkhauser on the show, for people who don't know the name. He's the brother of Albert Brooks.
Right.
So,
and if people haven't watched the show, it's just one of those. But, you know, if you've never watched Curb, you know, it took me years to watch Breaking Bad. It took me like a year to watch the last episode of The Sopranos, because now every time, you know, I've even seen Game of Thrones.
We haven't seen it.
We're just talking about that.
Because everybody talks about how amazing it is. But there's 40 more shows.
Right.
Are you going to be on Game of Thrones? Because then I'd watch.
You would. Yeah, because I'm perfect for that. Yeah. And then my manager is also one of the producers of some show called Vikings. And she's always over in Iceland or somewhere shooting. And I go, what are any Jewish Vikings, can't you squeeze me in on the show somewhere here? By the way, speaking of Jews, if I can get one word in.
Please.
My mother calls me this morning to wish me happy Passover. That show, I didn't even know it was Passover.
Yeah, Passover.
Now, Bill, you're half Jewish, so you celebrate to like, what, 2 o'clock? And then,
Good Friday kicks in.
And then Good Friday. So you get both. You get a giant holiday, Passover, Good Friday.
We dye matzo crackers at my house. Instead of Easter eggs, we do matzo crackers.
That's another reason I talk really fast, is try not to let you get any of your dumb jokes in. You have 3 hours when I'm not here to do your little jokes.
Right.
Don't try to step up.
Not when
jokes.
You're here.
Not when I'm here.
Well, I know.
What movie was I saying next time we have Bobby Slayton and I have to say how good he was? Do you remember? I watched it with my kids.
What movie was that?
Ed Wood.
Ed Wood.
You're in Ed
Wood.
Yeah, I had a great scene in Ed Wood. You know,
awesome.
There's very few Bobby Slayton things that are fun for the whole family.
Yeah.
You know, Skechers, you know, my favorite shoe store.
Yes.
I just them a commercial where, actually, funny you brought this up, because I got free Skechers for you. They gave me more coupons.
Oh, really?
Because,
oh, nice.
Because they love you guys. But you know, I wrote a commercial for them. I said, there's really nothing fun for the whole family anymore. And Jerry Seinfeld used to do a bit. I forgot what it was. There's no, you can't go to a football game and buy jewelry with the father. Everybody has fun. Some bit. So I said, there really
nothing is fun for the whole family. That's
Skechers.
What he used to say. Yeah.
You go in there and you buy shoes for everybody. But anyway, I did a show called Sunny with a Chance about 4 or 5 years ago with Demi Lovato. It was I had to be Polly the Polar Bear. I don't know if I ever told you this story. It's great. So Demi Lovato at the time wasn't doing well. I guess she had a drug problem, and she was, I guess she's cleaned up, but
yeah.
She wasn't a pleasant to be around. And the studio was very hot. The soundstage, because all the young Disney kids wanted it warm in there. And I'm in a polar bear costume playing a disgruntled kiddie show host. You've seen those before.
You know,
Bob Goldthwait did it in a movie. But anyway, so I'm wearing this polar bear costume the whole time. And I'm sitting in a dressing room, and it's on the old RKO Desilu Studios, and they have all these signs of the Marx Brothers, and Abbott Costello, and Humphrey Bogart, and I'm in my dressing room in a polar bear costume. And my leg itches. I can't scratch it, because I have to have a guy come in, a union guy, to take off the polar bear costume, so I can't even go to the bathroom, and there's no zipper. Polar bears, you didn't know, didn't have zippers or flies.
Really? Yeah.
So a guy has to come in and help me, like some kind of invalid. So I'm sitting there in between takes, and I'm sweating, and the polar bear head is off, and I look in the mirror, and some guy comes by to bring me water, and he says, "Do you know that this used to be one of the Marx Brothers dressing rooms when they did a night at the opera?"
Wow.
Or something. And I'm sitting there going, Groucho was in here, Humphrey Bogart was next door, and I'm sitting here in a goddamn polar bear costume. I mean, the showbiz to me, it's just not that glamorous all the time. You know, it wasn't. Oh, so here's what I have to tell you.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get recognized from the show, but they said, "Can you do like a polar bear?" And, "Hey, it's me, Paulie the Polar Bear. Hey, hey, Demi Lovato," and whatever. Okay. So I'm doing this polar bear voice. And about a month later, I'm walking out of a Home Depot in Las Vegas, of all places, and there's Girl Scouts selling cookies.
Yeah.
Look, I don't really like Girl Scout cookies, but I feel bad for these kids. And
sure.
I walked by and I said, "You know, I just bought some of your cookies last week." And as I walked by, one of the girls goes, "Hey, I know you. You're Paulie the Polar Bear."
Wow.
And I go, "Oh," so now I have to go back and buy cookies. But it was almost like a marathon, man, where the old woman recognized Zell, the guy that tortured them in Auschwitz.
Right.
So I felt like, oh my God, I've been outed.
It's
Paulie the Polar Bear.
It's the same story.
I got to go buy cookies now, which I did, because I can't let the kids down. Thank God I'm not on regular TV with kids, because I'd have to buy so many cookies.
There's so many. Please tell us about Ed Wood, because that's such a great movie, and to be a part of a
really
movie
is.
Like that, that's fantastic.
You know, Martin Landau won a Best Supporting Actor for that.
Yes, he did.
And it was great to work with him and Johnny
Depp. Played Bela Lugosi in that movie.
Well, if people haven't seen the movie, you know, my mother hated it, all my friends hated it. You have to be a real horror movie cult film aficionado to appreciate a film like Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Which, you know, melded a lot of fact and fiction. I got one great scene where I'm playing, I guess when Bela Lugosi was at the end of his life and he was addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
You know, he went on all these shows. Art Linkletter had a show, Red Skelton had a show, Milton Berle had a show. So I was a composite. And they wanted me to go, "Hey, it's me, Clem Cadiddlehop," like a Red Skelton thing. And I didn't do that, so I did Hunts Hall. "Hey, Louie, hiya, Dracula. Make me Walter," you know. So they put it on film, and Tim Burton calls me up and goes, "You got the part."
Oh.
So you hear all these horror stories about Johnny Depp over the years and what he's turned into. And when I met him, my daughter, another true story, I should really write a book. My daughter was about 7 or 8. And, you know, when kids are little, they like to watch the same movies
over and over.
And you got to sit there. And there was Beethoven and whatever, Sillyville, or whatever, over and over and over until the VHS tape wore out.
Yeah.
So she happened to love, at the time, Edward Scissorhands. She was getting with him. It was kind of a creepy, cool movie.
Yeah.
And my daughter loves that because she got a creepy, cool dad who turns around to all these creepy, cool movies. Anyway, so she watches Edward Scissorhands, and when she finds out I'm working with Johnny Depp, she wants to come meet Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
So I only did a couple of scenes in the movie, but you're on the set for 2 days. And what they did, painstakingly recreated Plan 9 from Outer Space, which I think the real Ed Wood shot for maybe $100.
One of the worst movies of all time.
One of the worst movies.
Yeah.
So there's like cardboard, you know, grave markers, and they're falling over. But the people that did the work to put together that graveyard for the actual film are all union people. So there's guys cutting, and there's scene designers, and there's guys drawing out the thing. It probably cost $1 million to do a scene, because they painstakingly recreated the thing that Ed Wood actually did with
Perfect.
The graveyard and Tor Johnson and Vampira. So it probably cost him, like I said, $100, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But Johnny Depp was on the set, and he could not have been a nicer guy. And both him and I were like little kids talking to Martin Landau. Because if you know about film, Martin Landau not only was in a couple of Hitchcock movies, North by Northwest, and was telling us Hitchcock stories and telling us who he'd worked with in the past. And I said, "But you also were in the Harlem Globetrotters Go to Gilligan's Island," which is true. I looked up on IMDb, and he did an episode with, for some reason, this is when the show had really jumped the shark.
Yeah.
I mean, and literally on an island, jumped the shark.
Yeah.
But when the Harlem Globetrotters land at Gilligan's Island, the show's over. Like, you know. So you can see his face drop. And he's bragging and talking, and it was wonderful. All these great people I've worked with, and I met Bogart, we went to Musso and Frank. But yes, Martin, weren't you also in the Harlem Globetrotters?
Right.
Go to Gilligan's Island.
You called him up perfectly.
I called world.
All right, hold that thought.
I got to tell you the story when we come
back. All right, Bobby Slayton has more stories. He's coming back, everybody. Go see Bobby. Oh, you can't go see Bobby. He's not playing in any clubs. Listen to him here on WGN. Bobby Slayton is here, not promoting anything, no, just wanted to come by.
Yeah, I'm not working, I don't think, till the fall. You know, I took a long time off of stand-up. I was getting tired of it. I mean, I love working Zanies in Chicago. There's a bunch of clubs I like working, but people always say to me, you know, between the Me Too movement and all the racial tension and Trump and the Mexicans and this and that, it's hard to do comedy now. I mean, I can't do the blackface anymore, apparently.
Apparently not.
You know, these stories about all these comics. Everybody's trying to be really careful now. Louis C.K., you know, unless you're living under a rock, you know, nobody knew that he was going to do these kind of things, getting naked in front of women against their will.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's a no-no now.
Can't do that either.
You can't do that either. So I just took some time off and I'll get my puppet out of storage, dust him off, and get back to
Can't do that anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
You know. Hey,
by the way, I love your new studios.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a look at the Navy Pier and the beautiful lake. But, you know, your old studios, the old beautiful historic building. What I loved about that is that you were downstairs and you could look out on Michigan Avenue. And the great thing about that was, no matter how bad your day is, no matter how sick you might be, your wife loses you, could be a walking country western song. And look out the window. And within 2 minutes, you go, it could be worse. I could be that guy. You know, there's always somebody walking by. Things can't be as bad as that guy walking by the window.
That's the saving grace.
Make you feel terrific.
Please explain your love of all things monsters. You just went to a giant monster fest.
Well, I know that you guys, I mean, your husband loves Star Wars, you love toys, I love monsters. I'm not a big sports guy. You know, I mean, I love going to Wrigley and, you know, I've seen the Cubs. I'm a Yankee fan growing up, but I don't really care so much about it. And I love monsters.
Why do you think it is? What's going on with monsters that you love?
I think all of us, from when you're a little kid, maybe not women so much because they grow up, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think guys, there's something from your childhood. You have that man cave, probably sports.
Yeah.
You know, you see grown men, where was I? Some, like in Minnesota recently or somewhere, you know, and there's a game and all these grown men are walking around with Viking hats. And it's like, what are you, 12? Are you an idiot? You know, and the husband and wife who sometimes go to a game dressed as their favorite player with the jersey.
Of course.
You know, so, I mean, people hold on to the sports and you pass it down to your kid. But I always loved monsters. And when I was a little kid, you know, I famous monsters of Filmland, I collected the magazines. So they had a giant monster convention. I have another lunatic friend from Florida who flew in just for the convention. Mm-hmm. And it's not as big as Comic-Con, but it's big. And there's, you know, makeup artists and all kinds of antique monster things and new things. And it's really cool.
For you, is it primarily the classic Universal monsters, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman?
Yeah,
the
a lot of the new stuff I don't care about. I mean,
but mostly the Creature of the Black Lagoon for
I
you.
I used to collect all that stuff when finally, unlike you, you know,
I let it go.
Yeah, I needed to fix my roof and I needed to do some new plumbing. And I said, I got to get rid of some of this stuff. I don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
You'll see when you're my age. You don't really need this. But I held on to a few choice pieces.
Did you good?
Like your wallet?
Well, my little monster wallet. But what's funny is when my girlfriend, who lives literally 5 minutes from me, we've been together for about 3 years now, and we are talking about soon selling our homes and moving in together.
Oh.
So, you know, I've already made it quite clear. Well, those gremlins, those are actually real gremlins from the Warner Brothers store. You can have those in your office. And I have this big classic Creature from the Black Lagoon that was made in the 1950s, where the fortune children. Well, you can have that. It goes in your office. And then I have a drum set that goes in your office. So I'm going to have a really, really, really big office.
Yes,
obviously,
you are.
When we move it together.
What did you think of The Shape of Water, which paid tribute to the Creature of the Black Lagoon? Did you like that movie?
I enjoyed it very much.
Good.
You know, I enjoyed it very much. And I like all that kind of stuff. You know, and that's what's great about going to Monsterpalooza. I know that it's something my girlfriend's not going to want to do.
Right.
You know, it's my version of smoking cigars to get her out of the room. You know, I mean, it only happens once a year. But, you know, although last night I took her to City Winery to see Graham Parker, I was telling you. And that was, for a lot of people don't even know who he is. But Bruce Springsteen said he was the only artist that he would pay to go see. And that's why I love coming to Chicago. You know, Gene and Giorgetti's. Tonight I'm going to Gibson's.
Nice.
My friend's got this restaurant, Formento's. And I just really eat a lot when I'm here. It's just a great, next to my hometown of New York, this is a great eating town.
Well, tell me about the difference, because New York is just, it's just in every direction there's something. Chicago's a little more
spread out.
Well, no,
more condensed. Well, both cities have been destroyed by corporate America.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because, I mean, you still see places like Lou Mitchell's downtown, which I love. And still a few Italian restaurants in New York, like Rao's. But, you know, when I grew up as a teenager, I go, well, I used to buy rolling papers here and blacklight posters, and now it's either a Starbucks, a Verizon store, or Jamba Juice, and the building's gone.
Right.
You know, so at right. least they're preserving your old digs at WGN.
Yeah.
But L.A.'s even worse. You know, where there used to be movie studios, there's a plaque. You know, it used to be here.
Really?
Yeah.
Someday, you know, some young kid's going to be acting. He's going to go to the Desilu Arcade Studios, and somebody's going to come in and go, this dressing room with Groucho Marx's, Tom Mix, and Paulie the Polar Bear.
Yeah.
He's going to go, really, Paulie the Polar Bear?
I love that guy.
But, you know, I never did finish my story about Ed Wood.
Go ahead. Tell us more.
You're so busy talking like it's your show. That's why I talked to Wendy, because you monopolize every conversation.
I was going to remind you about the tail end of your story.
Thank you. It ruins every story. It's your show, too. I forget. Sorry. Sorry, Mr. President. It's all about you. You're the best. You're the greatest, Bill. Your giant brain. Okay, so anyway, so I go, this isn't that great of a story. Anyway, so I'm working with Johnny Depp and Martin Landau for a couple of days on Ed Wood, and it was a big thrill for me. And they've recreated a Glen or Glenda. We have all these sets on an old warehouse. And my daughter, who, like I said, loved Edward Scissorhands, says to me, she wants to meet Johnny Depp. So I bring her to the set, and I'm not making this up. Johnny, coincidentally, had one of the gloves from Edward Scissorhands in his trailer because somebody's coming to do a photo shoot with him.
Yeah.
So the studio, whoever owned the glove, brought it to Johnny for that day to come do an interview with him. It's a total coincidence. So my daughter, standing there, a little snotty little, I don't know where she gets it. She got it from her mother, but... She meets Johnny Depp, and Johnny could not have been more polite because he's got children. He's a great guy. And he says, hello, Natasha, nice to meet you. And my daughter, like, as an aside, kind of whispers under her breath, nice guy, but he doesn't look anything like Edward Scissorhands. And so Johnny hears this and goes in his trailer and goes, I'll be right back, comes out wearing one of the gloves with all the giant scissors and knives on it. And it was about as big as her. And he goes, really? I don't look like him? You want a haircut? Come over here. Come over here. You want a haircut? That's when you wish you had a camera phone. That's one of the few times before phones had cameras.
Oh, sure, of course. You
know, I think I had a phone in my shoe. It was against smartphone.
Maxwell Smart.
Talk to Chief.
See, that's something you and I would remember, the kids today.
Yeah.
You know, remember when you were a kid and you're watching Get Smart and he had a dial phone in his shoe. And
right.
I remember thinking, if this was real, would this not be the greatest thing in the world to have a phone in my shoe?
Oh, the best.
To now, if you had something like that, could you imagine a bigger inconvenience of having a phone in your shoe?
Right.
Especially if the phone rings and you've just stepped in dog do, you answer the phone, and it's a robocall. How much would that suck?
Come on, Skechers should come out with a telephone shoe.
I'll talk to them about that.
The story I've told about you over the last couple of months was when you came out to Tree Time the last time you were here. During a break, there's finally a moment of silence, and I just look over at you, and you just, for no reason, you just go, shut up. I didn't say anything. You just, that was just your attitude.
No,
shut up.
I knew you were about to say something that was going to be inappropriate for a holy place like the Christmas tree store. You know, it's like going into the Vatican or something. You don't really, even if you're not religious, and you go back to Jerusalem, you feel the religion. I walked into that Christmas tree store, and I saw those old ladies with the brownies and Lou Malnati's pizza they were giving out. I was never a fan of deep dish. I loved it. My whole life changed. I almost became a Christian and a Chicago pizza convert.
We were this close.
Oh, very close.
How's your dog?
Oh, my dog. He passed away.
Oh, God, I am so sorry.
Thanks for ending the show. I expected that from Bill, not from you.
I'm a dog lover, so I'm
Wendy
so sorry.
Wendy outbid me to ask that question. Yeah. I was going to ask Wendy, goes, I'll give you $10.
Everybody listening to your show, almost everybody who's ever had a dog, has gone through
worst
this.
Thing ever.
You know, I think a parent or a child is a lot worse, but you know, when you get a dog, and I think George Carlin did a bit about it, you're buying a tragedy, you know it's going to die, you know, you're hoping your children will grow up and go to college and take care of you, but a dog, and I bought the dog for my daughter many, many years ago, and the dog jumps in my lap. And you know, before you knew about rescue dogs, so we go to this little pretentious Beverly Hills store down the street from us. I said to my daughter, I'm not buying you $1,000 miniature pincher. You know, I mean, you don't need a dog. Just, Daddy, just go see the dog.
Yeah.
So I go, I sit down, the thing's as big as an inchworm. It jumps into my lap. Okay. So I was a sucker. And I get the dog for my daughter. Who takes care of the dog? Who loves the dog? Who sleeps in my bed? The dog. You know?
Yep. That's how it works.
and I just had to put him down, and it was just horrible. Well, I hate to say this, when my wife passed away, it was bad, but I went to the shelter, got a rescue wife, and they took her place with no problem. But the dog, that was my boy. That's your best friend.
Look, you disappointed Wendy with that. I thought that was hysterical, but Wendy just gave the nod of disapproval.
I'm disappointingly laughing.
Oh,
I have a little house with his ashes next to my wife's ashes. My house looks like a mausoleum now.
Just ashes everywhere. Bobby, it's so good to see you.
I know.
Get another dog.
And by the way, this is not Good Friday. This is anytime I'm on your show, it's a great Friday.
Excellent Friday.
This is the greatest day. I love you
Friday.
Guys.
We love you back. It's Bobby Slayton, everybody. You can't see him this time, but we will certainly tell you the next time he's playing in town. Coming up, the stories that matter with Dave Schwann from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.